Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Hello, this is Abe Thompson with New Cyber Frontier. Coming to you straight from the SecureSet campus here in Colorado Springs, where we do cybersecurity education. Today, my guest is General Scott Bethel. General Bethel is the President and CEO of Integrity ISR, but there is a lot more to his story, so I don't want to belabor my words anymore, and let's hear from the General himself. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How is everybody this morning? It's delightful to be here. As you made such a nice introduction, my name is Scott Bethel, and I am the president of Integrity ISR, which does intelligence surveillance and reconnaissance, as well as cyber security and policy. And as in this lane, we've got a lot of interesting activity happening relative to security policy, as well as emergency response management and the development of leaders to respond to those activities. It's a very large growth industry. And so not only are we doing that here in the United States, but we also have a very large practice overseas doing the same thing. For myself, I spent 28 years in the United States Air Force doing primarily intelligence and cyber. But in addition, I did a large amount of mentoring and development of leaders, and that's a big practice area that's really important to me.
Well,
so that's sort of my story. What else can we talk about?
Well, definitely excited to hear about your focus on mentoring. You know, mentorship inside the cybersecurity community is truly proving to be a key component. You know, people that are there to develop you along the way. One of the things that you and I, you know, have in common is our military experience, and we, you know, we're very intentional about that process along the way. Did you see the same sort of mentoring and focus even as you got more senior in both sort of the government and then in leadership in other organizations?
Yeah, absolutely, both on the commercial and the military side. You know, there's a certain amount of capability that comes with experience as well as with training. And in the course of my time on both sides of this exciting and exotic fence, I found that there's a real need to help entities get forward and move ahead in a larger context. And so there's both a lack of understanding, but also a lack of experience and definable goals and activities that really are benefited by guys like you and I getting out there in the community and interacting with a variety of people to try to make things better.
Sure thing. You wrote an article on the future of cyber risk management, and what were some of the key points there that you'd wanted to get across?
Well, you know, risk management is, again, in many cases, a very largely misunderstood requirement, even a misunderstood component. And as a result, risk is either taken too much into account or not enough into account. I mean, when you have a lot of options, you can transfer risk, you can avoid it, you can mitigate it, there's a lot of ways that you can approach it. But in the article, the idea was that you have to first really thoroughly define what the expected risk is.
Sure.
And is it severe, is it not severe, or are we not thinking through the entire challenge as opposed to simply acting out of lack of information and lack of focus?
Certainly. And of course, in the business that we grew up in, there's no such thing as risk avoidance. You know, we're in a risky business, and the reality is that has now permeated society. It is no longer risk avoidance, it's risk mitigation. And certainly it's not when, or not if, but when. This is Abe Thompson with New Cyber Frontier. We're gonna break away to hear a few
right
words from our sponsor.
With the rest of today's show, right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
Hello, this is New Cyber Frontier Podcast. This is Abe Thompson, your host here from the SecureSet campus in Colorado Springs. Our guest this morning is General Scott Bethel. General, we were just kind of talking about risk management, risk avoidance, et cetera. As you look at sort of the cybersecurity industry and discipline, what do you see as foremost on your mind that needs to be addressed?
Well, step one is, of course, the increase in qualified, certified talent. Number one, right now, among U.S. companies, there's a serious lack of capability and lack of expertise and complete training. So the first step is to increase and broaden and make more thorough the overall talent pool. The second challenge is to understand the landscape, and that's a leadership issue as well as a challenge that's deeper and greater than just the people. It is affect the structure, effective strategy, and then, you know, creating an operational framework that works better than just the average young person coming and looking at a screen. And then finally, the third thing is to understand the threat landscape. And as we've talked about in the past, the cyber landscape is super tricky because there are so many actors.
Yeah.
It's not simply a military domain, and it's not simply a commercial domain, and it's not simply a private or personal domain. It is all of the above, which creates an immense amount of challenge for people operating in the cyber domain. You've got people buying sweaters. You've got people sending election tampering. There's all kinds of issues associated with that. So those are the big challenges that are clearly resident in the overall effort.
Certainly, and we're getting ready to roll into that season even now as you know, everybody's doing their online Christmas shopping and whatnot. And of course, I'm sure we'll see plenty of stories in the news. Now, you highlighted a couple things very close to my heart. First of all, you talked about a need for certified and qualified talent. Of course, SecureSet, that's our heart here, is to help address that gap. The other one you mentioned is understanding the landscape therein. And you called it a leadership issue. Now, is the, you know, you and I grew up in a leadership focused organization and entity. How are we seeing true and genuine leadership versus management emerge in the cyberspace?
Well, I would say that there's not a tremendous amount of clear leadership, because most companies don't invest in the development of cyberspace and security leadership. So most CTOs, CIOs, even CISOs, oftentimes come out of some other operational component of a company.
Sure.
Were they formerly a COO? Were they someone who is at the bottom end of the C-suite? So many times they really don't have a thorough understanding of what security is. Or I was just consulting with a very large defense company, and the guy that runs their cybersecurity is also the same person that runs their physical security component. And so you've got, and I'm sure he's great at that, but you've got a mixed level of expertise. So right. Ultimately, for a company, an enterprise at all, whether it's government or commercial, it is to their benefit to ensure that the people that are going to be in charge of this component of their operational profits, and really more importantly, their what allows them to exercise profit and loss, is someone who's fully competent, fully trained, and understands the entire.
Certainly. Now, you know full well, having been in command and sort of in a, you know, in the defense mindset and mechanism, if we don't develop our people, if we don't find the certified and qualified talent, what are the consequences? How grave is this issue?
Well, I mean, if you don't find one, then you have to manufacture one. And so there are two ways to do that, and I see it both ways. A company can start their own internal training capabilities, their own career path, and this rarely ends well because it's not mandated. You can leave the development and training in the hands of individual supervisors who may or may not be very skilled as far as being trainers or being prepared to elevate a new hire into a place where he can be successful. The other option, which is generally more successful, is to outsource that and to connect with an entity like Cyber Defenses or an entity that does training that produces certified capable professionals, so that when there's an effort or something new, they can have the right people.
Sure. And are most entities and organizations ready for the associated costs of doing the right thing? Or if not, how do they get ready?
I think at the moment, my observation in my own business lane is that most companies want to do almost everything on the cheap, to include development of capability. So as they are doing a talent search or a capability search, what they'll do is they will have some sort of minimum standards that are required, and you know, it might be something that you can get in a weekend on Groupon, or it could be something more challenging. But in the end, they'll have some sort of minimum capability, and that will be insufficient, really, for what's needed to get it done.
So this approach really kind of doesn't just put these individuals at risk, but it really puts kind of our way of life and our nation's economy and a number of other things at risk. How do we unify folks on the seminal importance of more than just the minimum?
in a case like this, it is very much that necessity is the mother of invention.
Yeah.
And unless there is, unless having untrained or lesser skilled people ends up in some kind of crisis or profit loss or opportunity loss or something of that nature, unless that happens, then the company is not really compelled to create a cadre of super skilled, super able people. And to do that, there's a cost. And so my observation is that until a company determines that it's in their best interest to have a talent pool that's deep and rich and fully qualified, they don't do it successfully and capably.
It's heartbreaking when we're kind of always in reaction mode as opposed to strategic, you know, forward
right.
leaning mode. Yeah.
Right.
So you've also been very involved in many places in your career and your experience in the education piece. What is that component of your life taught you about how to address this issue?
Would you do me a favor and repeat that question? You came in just a little bit broken.
Sure.
On that one.
So you've been involved in education. You've been a professor in the education space. You did intelligence education and training. You also owned that component of training inside the Air Force intelligence infrastructure. What is your life in education, that component of your life, kind of taught you about how we solve this?
Well, so in order for a guy, for a person who's coming out of this capability to be ready, there are many routes to get there. Some choose to go the more traditional college route, where they end up taking a cyber degree and all that goes with that. But the more successful, the faster, perhaps more efficient way to get there is to take the technical expectations and get those done in a way that's quick and efficient. And so I have found that non-traditional technical training, whether that's through community college or through other entities, is the most successful and has the ability to get somebody in place and moving forward faster, better, smarter than going the long way of getting all the other stuff done in that fashion.
And General, we'll unpack some more of that in just a moment. Let's break away to hear from our sponsors here at the new Cyber Frontier.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
Hello, this is Abe Thompson with the new Cyber Frontier podcast, podcasting from the SecureSat campus here in Colorado Springs, Colorado, where we do cybersecurity education. My guest on today's podcast is General Scott Bethel, who's the CEO and founder of Integrity ISR, and a much storied history. General, we were just talking about your view that the non-traditional education space may be a good component in our strategy to solve the leadership issue, the readiness issue inside of cybersecurity. Can you unpack sort of what components should go into that non-traditional education, which would be the most essential?
Well, to be successful in the total enterprise, I think you need, four big skills. One, the number one skill is to have fully credentialed, fully vetted ability to act on the network in a defensive way. That's the largest consumer of talent, manpower, and capability. The second skill that you need to have is the ability to adapt and react to some kind of penetration. So are you agile enough to isolate the threat and put it in an environment where you can assess, quarantine, and then deal with it? The third skill that a person's got to have that's successful is the ability to retool the network after a threat has been identified so that there's little to no degradation in capability. And then the last capability, if possible, is to become skilled in some sort of ethical and capable hacking. And the ability to, in a way that is appropriate, be able to go on the offensive
Sure. And of course, if offensive is within your you know, authority, that's key. Now, of course, on the offensive side, of course, we have to leave a lot of that on the table in terms of specifics. But because our education system can't really go, into full depth in practicing that, what's the best way to prepare? So if you're going to go into law enforcement or into the government, to get the best skill set so you're ready to take that on? Is it the certified ethical hacker? Is it an amalgam of various skills and approaches?
I would say that it's much more an amalgam of capabilities and focus that that the successful guy operating in the domain comes with the ability to agilely jump between the expectations and the challenges. And it's true that, you know, as far as ethical hacking and so forth, and the ability to go on the offensive, even in a modest way, the challenges to try to make sure that if you have the top three nailed, the ability to defend, the ability to react, and the ability to adapt, then you're going to really succeed in both the commercial and the government space.
Sure. Now, one thing that you also mentioned, even inside of the ethical hacking realm, there's a key word in there, ethical. We start very early trying to inform about the ethical ramifications when we're training folks, because we're giving them great power, and of course that accompanies hopefully great responsibility. You've chosen a key name for your organization, Integrity ISR. Tell me a little bit about why you chose that and how that factors into your heart in our industry.
Well, you know, I chose that for two reasons. One, because, and you're 100% right on the ethical nature of operating on the domain and having access to or being able to gain access to people's information and data that is not necessarily intended for or designed for public use. However, those same nodes and that same capability can introduce a threat either to you personally or to the company you're working for. I chose the name Integrity ISR because, one, I think that being in business, you need to, if you don't take an approach that has integrity and that is focused on doing the right ethical thing, both in terms of your relationships financially and professionally, that you're missing out on an opportunity. And the second one is, I have a close relationship with Jesus Christ, and being able to discuss things in an ethical way from a sort of a biblical context it allows me to have some grounding and some clarity in how I approach the world and my life. And if I put that in my business name, then it stays at the forefront of my brain.
Indeed, a fantastic source, to have a foundation like that, and someone that's going to come across as trustworthy and certainly not afraid to incorporate a moral framework into the way they approach. I greatly appreciate that from my perspective as well. So you mentioned another one that is key in the education space. It's kind of hard to remain agile because the threat changes all the time, and so with the threat changing, you have to change and address what you're teaching. What's the best route to do that?
Totally. I mean, the hardest thing about being a successful educator, and you guys at SecureSet know this super well, that if you're training stuff that was timely and pertinent 6 months or a year ago, you're not going to be the least bit effective. And the young folks that go out into the field, whether that's in industry or if it's in the government or just some other way, you will end up, the company that receives that guy will go, why did he go to this school? What do you know? That's
Sure.
It's really important to stay current if you're going to be in the training business, because it's very easy to simply go back over and over and over material and detail that is already dated.
Well, and realistically too, as we learn and we develop, the actors are also learning and developing and becoming more and more dangerous. So
it's true. And
go ahead.
Just to close that thought just briefly. So you know, unlike in a traditional military, even a law enforcement setting, you have actors that are government owned, meaning that they are an entity of the government. There are entities that are government sponsored, mm-hmm. meaning that they're paid for by the government. That are not. There are entities that are insurgent type actors. There are entities that are inspired, and there are people that can cause damage to your network almost unintentionally because they don't really realize what they're doing. And so you have all of those components and all of those challenges to the young cyber professional, and how you manage that person's, his or her education and processing, so that they're prepared for all the diversity of threats that sure. can come their way.
Sure. So there are companies, there are mom and pops, there are larger organizations that are out there looking for help in this space, looking for ideas on who to choose and how to make the best decision about where to go, particularly in their learning and training strategy. What are some tips and calls to action you could give them when they're out there in the space looking for organizations to help them be most effective?
A super growing component of the cyber operations lane is essentially what I like to call timeshare. The ability to use professionals and use capability in a distributed virtual way. So if I'm looking for a successful partner in this lane, the things I'm looking for are a track record of success. So who are their current clients? What are the demands of their current clients? Secondly, what are their credentials? So, I mean, are these, you know, guys in a basement, or are these people with significant credentials?
Sure.
The third thing I'm looking for is the breadth and depth of what they bring to the table, and what do they offer me. And then last, I look at price. Because in the end, you might save a buck by going with a new or cheap company, but that will cost you a lot. Either, and you always have to remember too that if you have a cyber breach or a penetration, it's not just the money that's lost; it's the company reputation, it's the confidence that people have in doing business with you, whether that's, you know, online credit cards or some other, you know, delivery mechanism. So the point is that it's very important that you have a solid defensive nature, defensive posture in this way.
Sure. Where does the average small business person go to research who to pick and how to get this support, in your view?
I tend to go to sort of professional coalition, professional representation websites. So I found a lot of companies that have put themselves out there in advertisement on, for example, the Armed Forces Communications and Electronics Association, FCA.
Sure.
They do a great job. I also have, you know, you can go to a lot of the trade shows, for example, Black Hat, and there a lot of companies will set up a booth there, and you pay an entry fee, but you can actually interview dozens of companies and establish and discern their capabilities. You can discern their capabilities in a larger context at one of those kind of trade shows.
Excellent.
Those places. And listen, I'm here at the airport, and somebody's lost their cell phone, and Kevin knows where they're sending emails to and what they're doing
my.
With information. So there's a cyber action happening right by there.
Oh my goodness. Wow. The general live and on scene at the cyber activity there in the airport. Speaking of airports, you probably want to head back to Colorado here soon. You just missed a great snow, but you know, there'll be more. Well, General, it's been a pleasure to speak with you, and certainly we'd love to have you back on the show. You know, just to kind of hear your heart, you've got such a breadth of experience, and we could go on and on for sure. So I thank you for your very practical insights and just for what you're still doing out there in the industry. We've appreciated having you.
Abe, it's a pleasure as always, and I will look forward to seeing the team and getting out there towards the end of December and getting a chance to see all the great things that are happening.
Hey, we're excited as well, sir. This is Abe Thompson. This has been the new Cyber Frontier podcast with our special guest, General Scott Bethel, President and CEO now of Integrity ISR. Coming to you from the SecureSet campus here in Colorado Springs, we thank you for being with us today on the Preeminent Cyber Podcast. Good day.
The views or opinions expressed during this podcast are not those of Colorado Technical University.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.